Today on Family Talk. America's military is one of the strongest in the world, yet there are internal changes that threaten the strength of our forces. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. Today, we have a guest on the line to talk about a topic that may or may not be on your radar, but it's something that could impact the future safety of our nation. Elaine Donnelly is the president of the Center for Military Readiness. It's a nonpartisan public policy organization that researches how social issues impact the military. She joins Dr. Dobson and Dr. Meeker to talk about the latest round of gender-related policies in the armed forces. The decision to allow women into combat roles could potentially undermine military readiness, so this is an important topic for every American. We're glad you joined us for today's edition of Family Talk.
This is a subject that puts a lump in my throat and makes me breathe hard because I'm extremely concerned about the status of our military today. I served in the military. I was a reservist, but nevertheless, I care about it. And there are changes that are taking place now that really take my breath away. This topic literally could impact our national defense. And the safety of all America could be at stake. I hope I'm not overstating that, but our listeners do need to be aware of some changes in America's military that are alarming. Our guest is Elaine Donnelly, and I've known her for 25 years. She's been on the program many times. And she is one of the most knowledgeable people in the country when it comes to the social agenda that's being forced onto the military. Elaine has carefully researched the so-called gender-neutral policies, gay influences, LGBT, and other influences. And you know what the kind of policies that come out of the White House today. President Obama is determined to change the military, and he's appointing people that are implementing his biases. So that's kind of a background. But Elaine, as I said, you've been my guest for at least 20 years, and I've come to trust the information that you've told our listeners. And I want you to start by telling us what the developments are right now that cause alarm to you and me and others who are knowledgeable of what's happening in the military.
Well, thank you, Dr. Dobson, for that wonderful introduction. You are one of the few people in this nation who really understand the seriousness of this issue, and you have rolled up your sleeves and done everything you can do to support the men and women, our active duty men and women in the military, who every day have to live under the policies made by the president, usually by Congress. But in the last 7 years, this administration has been making very harmful changes in the policies that affect both men and women in the military. Congress, unfortunately, has been missing in action. They have not had hearings except on problems like sexual assault in the military, but they're not connecting the dots. And they've said virtually nothing when last December 3rd, the Secretary of Defense announced that henceforth, young women in the military will be eligible for direct ground combat assignments. Now, we have to differentiate what that means. Women have served with courage in harm's way, in war zones. They have done amazing things. We're very proud of them, and their families are proud of them. Many have died in recent wars. But the units that attack the enemy are what we're talking about today, the infantry, armor, artillery, special operations forces, Navy SEALs, the Rangers, Delta Force, these are the tough guys. These are the ones who, when they are called upon to attack the enemy, they have to be ready, and the policies that affect them and the training has to be as tough as it possibly can be. Now we're going to have gender integration in these units. And when the media asked the Secretary of Defense, will this be voluntary, he made it unequivocally clear, of course not. It will have to be on the same equal basis as men. So once you sign up to join the military, young women will have a heavier burden because they will be subject to these involuntary assignments if they are minimally qualified. That's another thing. They don't have to do 20 pull-ups like the men do. If they can only do 3, they're qualified to go into the infantry. You see how this is all going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to be subject to injury rates at least double those of men, higher in the combat arms units that are what they call dismounted. That means you walk, you have to march, you carry a heavy burden on your back. And when you get there, then you have to attack the enemy. Research done by the United States Marine Corps in the past 3 years, especially in the past year, showed that in that environment, the performance of gender-mixed groups lagged far behind the performance of all male groups. Mm-hmm. Now, these are realities that the administration just swept aside and said, we don't care, we're going to make women eligible for the combat arms, regardless of the consequences, and Congress has said virtually nothing about it.
Elaine, could I interrupt and just clarify for our listeners? So are you saying that a woman who enters the military at any level,
yes,
whether from the lowest level to, say, special ops, special forces, mm-hmm, has different requirements for physical fitness and training than the men do, and they say that's okay?
Well, let's separate out what training levels there are. On the Presidential Commission, on which I served in 1992, we thought about this at great length. When you go to boot camp, Paris Island, you're a young woman Marine, there are different scores and different requirements in boot camp, and there's a reason why that is, because of physical differences. A man can do 20 pull-ups easily. For a woman to do 3 is asking a lot. In fact, when they tried to change the requirement to 3 pull-ups, 55% of the young women could not do it. Now, if we said the women have to do the same as the men, we would lose a lot of good women Marines. And a lot of young women would be disappointed because they couldn't serve their country if they're not as strong as the men.
Mm-hmm.
So now the Marines have been ordered to ignore all that, make even boot camp gender neutral, and I can tell you nobody knows how they're going to resolve this dilemma. Now, the commission said different standards are okay in boot camp. Entry level, that's fine. But when you get into combat training, you must not have different standards. We didn't expect that there would be a mandate to do what this president has done. Now, having different standards, it's untenable.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have gender-neutral, identical standards. The problem is the standards are going to be gender-neutral, but lower than before. Now, what does that do to the men in the combat arms? They're not going to get the same tough training that they would have otherwise. That's not good. That's going to make them more vulnerable. Women are going to be at a disadvantage, too. Let's say they're the best possible person in a unit that currently is gender integrated. And she goes into the infantry. She's at the bottom of the heap. She has to compete with men. She is subject to injury at greater rates, and she is disadvantaged in her career. In fact, she may have to wash out because of debilitating permanent injury. How
mm-hmm.
does this benefit women? It doesn't benefit women at all. So women have served in harm's way. There are no barriers to women's careers. They are promoted at rates equal to or faster than men. And it's been that way for decades. I've confirmed this over and over again. But the administration doesn't care. This is a social experiment. They're trying to prove that men and women are interchangeable in all roles, including the toughest ones. And mm-hmm. they're going to get people killed as a result. How many bones do we have to break to demonstrate what medical experts have told me, and they've said this on the record? If you start fooling around with female physiology, yeah, you're going to weaken bones. And I won't go into all the technical medical terms,
mm-hmm.
but
that's right, sure.
If you change the calcium levels, you make bones more brittle, you end up having more injuries, and that's what happens when you try to build up body muscle strength in women when they don't have the same hormones that men do, the androgens.
Yeah.
Testosterone, estrogen, they're different. They're different for a reason. You start trying to fool around and make women more like men, you're going to end up hurting the health of those women and putting them at greater risk of injury. Now,
yeah,
the evidence of this is so overwhelming, most people are not exposed to it. I make it my business to read all this stuff. The Marines did everything right. Their research is overwhelming. It is convincing and definitive. It's the other half of the story from what our presidential commission did back in 1992.
Elaine, you've mentioned that commission a couple of times, and you also said that I gave you a good introduction. The truth of the matter is I didn't, and I want to do it now. There's a reason for the authority with which you speak. Elaine Donnelly is president of the Center for Military Readiness. It's a nonpartisan public policy organization that specializes in social issues in the military. Since 1993, and I met her shortly after this, this organization has advocated sound priorities in making of military social policy. Elaine is also a member of the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services, as well as the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces. And she was appointed to that role by President Herbert Walker Bush.
Yes, actually, the Dakowitz appointment, when I was first appointed, it was in the Reagan administration. And that was a three-year term. And it was my introduction to the marvelous institution that the armed forces are. The men and women who serve are so impressive. You learn the jargon, the language of the Pentagon. But I also noticed the politics of the Pentagon. Male officers are always afraid to question very aggressive female officers. Rank doesn't matter. And then you have civilian feminists coming along and saying, we know what's best for the military. When I was there, we did make a lot of recommendations supporting women in the military. Nowadays, all the Dakowitz, that committee does, is push the feminist agenda for the military. So they don't represent the majority of women in the military. The Army did a survey. 92.5% of Army women in that survey, and this was very recent, said they want nothing to do with these direct ground combat assignments, but they want to serve their country. Is it not unfair to say to women, you're going to have to carry heavier burdens proportionately? When you put the same burden on a 5'2" woman and a 6'2" man, is that really fair? Is that equal? Well, according to current ideology, it is. And she's just going to have to put up with it. Well, a lot of women may decide not to join the military. The recruiting statistics are not encouraging. Propensity to serve is very low among women as it is. And there's no evidence that it would be improved. In fact, I learned just recently that these propensity surveys, what they do with young people, like high school kids, are you thinking about military service? Not once have they asked them, would you join if you knew that you could be involuntarily assigned to the infantry? They don't even ask the question because they don't want to know the answer. Now, obviously, you're not going to be forced into the Navy SEALs if you don't want to be a Navy SEAL. What will happen there is the standards will have to change to accommodate women. Why do these men have to march in the surf and carry these heavy logs and do sit-ups with heavy, wet logs on their stomachs? Why do they have to do that? That's just not necessary. It interferes with the goal of gender diversity metrics. That's another word for quotas. Okay, so the pressure for quotas in the Pentagon is very real. And then they turn around and they say, oh, no, there won't be any quotas. When you talk out of both sides of your mouth, then people watching this say, wait a minute, can we trust the leaders of the Pentagon? I certainly don't, not under this president. And that's why it's so important that we choose a better president next time around.
You mentioned that officers are sometimes fearful of giving orders to women that they might find not to their liking. That's not only true there, but throughout culture. You also mentioned Congress has kind of become pity-patty when it comes to this issue. And the congressmen are scared. Everybody's afraid of antagonizing feminists, and it is working to the detriment of the military.
Well, that's right. And it's all Congress had to do was say, you will not change anything, Secretary of Defense, until we have the chance to look at this data. And if there is not any evidence of benefit to the military, if we're not going to strengthen the military by doing this, then we're not going to do it. And you have to give us time to review all of that information, and we reserve the option to make policy. Congress, unfortunately, did not do that. They sent a weak letter. They got a disingenuous response on New Year's Eve. The next day, within hours, the hammer came down. On the Marine Corps, you will have women in all communities of combat, and you have to eliminate your separate gender training, which is known to be superior. Men and women train separately because that way they're independent. The women don't have to compete against the men. They have to be self-reliant. They know it works, and yet the Secretary of the Navy, and it might have been retaliation against the Marine Corps. I mean, you would think that Congress would be up in arms by this high-handed treatment that they have gotten. There's going to be some hearings. But if the hearing only discusses how to implement bad policy, this is not what I would call oversight. The Senate and the House have been derelict in their duty to assert sound values and high standards for our military. And it's very frustrating because, yes, there are some members, and they come from both parties, women especially, who see this as a matter of equality, equal opportunity. And then you have combat veterans like Representative Zinke and Representative Russell. They stood up against Loretta Sanchez in a debate last May. But it wasn't enough. The chairman did not back them up. And here we go. So we're not going to give up, though, because the reality of the research stands. Reality always does, doesn't it? You can play games with your mind all you want. You can come up with theories. You can pretend we have a gender-free, gender-neutral military. You can pretend that unfairness is equal. You can do all these things in your mind. But when it comes down to combat realities, I think this story is not over.
Yeah, it's not an equal opportunity activity, is it?
It's not. And yet the Pentagon really believes this stuff. They think that equal opportunity, gender diversity, is the most important thing. And I do want to say one thing about diversity. It's generally a positive word, certainly has been in the past. When racial discrimination was eliminated by executive order, Harry Truman, it was done for reasons of military necessity. We needed those really good soldiers. They had to eliminate the irrational prejudice against minorities. What we see now, though, is very rational reasons why we should not treat men and women as if they are the same. There is no correlation between both of these arguments, and yet the weakest argument, you keep hearing it all the time, well, if we eliminated racial discrimination, we can have women in the infantry. It is one of the biggest non sequiturs in public life.
Yeah, ideology and reality are far, far, far apart here. And, you know, as a mother of an adult son and adult daughters, if my kids were going to go into the military, I would be very nervous for both of them because this really hurts the women, as you said earlier, but it really impacts the men as well on many different levels.
It does.
You know, if you have a fallen soldier in front of you, the 6'4" man has fallen, and you're 5'2" woman and you need to get him out of harm's way, I would not want to be that man. You know, how in the world is she going to do that? Talk about the morale as well. This must affect men who are fighting, it must affect their morale. I mean, it's not only a threat to their physical health and their safety, but to their morale as well.
Yes. Thank you. When you talk about the difference between ideology and reality, you've nailed it on the head. Morale, cohesion, those issues are intangibles on which the tangibles depend. Morale is hurt when cohesion is broken down. Cohesion needs to be properly defined. It means mutual trust for survival in battle. Now, the Pentagon has advisors, and they've redefined cohesion. They think it means being liked, hanging out, having friends, and task cohesion, working together on projects like in the civilian world. These are civilian concepts, and they don't work in the military. If physical strengths put a person at risk, if they need to be rescued, the Marines explored this in their research, and they had tests with casualty evacuations, heavy weights, or sometimes actual persons being evacuated. And the failure rate in the gender mixed area was very evident, although in some of them where they only had one woman on the task force unit, the men did the heavy work. Mm-hmm. So the unit did well, even though the men were doing the heavy work. They call this compensation. A lot of compensation going on. Now, you can do that in a 9-month test in the desert out west. You cannot continue to do it on an actual battlefield. So, again, the researchers were from the University of Pittsburgh. These are experts in physiology. And they were very frank in their findings, and they're voluminous. And if you read them, you see a clear picture of what many people know instinctively. There is a difference between men and women. No kidding. So those differences matter in actual combat. So here you have a situation. Cohesion's being hurt in two ways, because the men know they're not going to be able to rely as much on the women, and it's not the women's fault. Vertical cohesion is trust between the commander-in-chief and the troops that he commands. If the troops look up and they see a president saying, well, you're going to have to do this even if lives are put at greater risk, why should they have trust in that commander-in-chief?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many other things related to this that come to mind. One is the matter of motherhood and babies. I know this will drive the feminists crazy, but there's a reason why the men have fought the battles for centuries, for millennia.
Yes.
And we're talking about one of them here having to do with strength. But there's another one, and it has to do with the next generation. It's putting at risk the women who are committed to their children.
Yeah.
And it just bothers me that nobody seems to mention that. Babies matter.
As a pediatrician, I'm always watching out for kids. It's not fair to the children, because all the research shows as well, whether a mother is working outside the home or is a full-time homemaker caring for her children, the women still carry the lion's share of child care. And that's just the way it is. So if you take the person who's spending most time and energy caring for children and you send her overseas and she comes home in a body bag, what have you done to those children? I'm sorry, it's not fair to the kids.
Well, the children are the veterans of these recent wars. They have lost so much. And yes, they lose a lot when their father is taken from them. But when a young mother leaves one or two or more small children behind, it just tears at your heart. On my webpage, we have the names of all the women who have been killed since 9/11, and you can see that there are quite a few that have had small children left behind. Your heart breaks. The commission looked at this issue in great detail, and we heard from a lot of child psychologists, but now, you're right, no one talks about this subject. It was not part of marine research. It's sort of finessed. Pregnancy leaves now have been lengthened. Then it becomes a readiness issue. If you take pregnancies and maternity and long-term, as long as a year, leave to be a parent, well, how does that affect the combat unit? And if that combat unit has only 11 members and two of them leave due to pregnancy, you're really causing a huge problem. And you're right, nobody really has talked about this. You have injuries, medical differences, pregnancy, all of these reasons why it is better to keep certain units all male. That doesn't mean in the, you know, in the larger units, brigade size, where they have big bases and even in remote areas, women can and they do serve very well, even though they're far away from home. But you put them in a combat unit, it's an entirely different environment. Direct ground combat is the tip of the spear. And there you have an entirely different set of requirements. It's not fair to treat women like men in that environment.
Elaine, you have so much else to tell us about this. I want to do another program and talk about this, especially a questionnaire that you've given to the presidential candidates, those that are running. And you have not had much of a response from these guys. They're scared to death, I think, most of them.
Well,
and the women, too, Hillary and others. You've received very little response. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to save that for the next program because we're out of time. But, Elaine, I thank God for you.
Thank you.
I don't know anybody else that's out there fighting for traditional understandings of masculinity and femininity as it relates to the military. There's also the gay issue that's coming in like a tidal wave.
Yes.
So can you stay with us for
By
the
all
next
means.
Time, and we'll pick it up right here.
Yes.
We will meet you right here next time.
Wow, we're going to have to continue this fascinating conversation with Elaine Donnelly tomorrow. You've been listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, and I hope you'll make a point to tune in next time as we discover more about how gender-related policies are affecting the strength and morale of our fighting forces. In the meantime, if you'd like to know more about Elaine's organization, the Center for Military Readiness, you can find a link on our website, drjamesdobson.org. Through that link, you can discover thoughtful articles on every social issue facing the military today. Our website again is drjamesdobson.org. Or give us a call at 877-732-6825 for more information. Thank you for spending part of your day with us. God bless you, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Family Talk. Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.